Welcome back, everybody, to kick off your week in hockey. It is the Monday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. As always, it's Ian Mendes and Haley Salvian with you for the next hour or so. Arthur Staple is going to stop by, chat all things New York hockey with us, including the new arena opening for the Islanders. I guess we should also point this out. Some important bagel talk is coming your way with Arthur Staple. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We'll also talk to him about the Islanders' early season struggles. Hasn't been a good start for Barry Trotz's crew. On the other side of town, though, Rangers are off to a great start, so we'll talk about that with Arthur Staple. We'll also hit on the white-hot Calgary Flames, who are collecting shutouts at a record pace to start this season. We'll also hit on the suddenly surging Arizona Coyotes, and we'll answer some of your mailbag questions we got on Twitter. We'll do some multiple-choice madness, talking about Rick Bowness's handling of Riley Tufte and his return to his hometown. All of that is going to be jammed into the next 60 minutes or so. Is Haley Salvian sufficiently caffeinated for this podcast? Because you're dragging a little bit on a Monday because apparently you did not sleep.
Yeah, back to our regularly scheduled programming of me being tired and dragging on a Monday morning podcast episode. Back on mountain time. Back on my... wouldn't recommend sleep schedule. I can't explain it. I don't have a good reason for it, but I didn't sleep. I stayed up late working on stuff. I don't know. Are you the type of person to like get up early and finish writing a story? Because I'm like last night I came up with a story idea. I was like, okay, I really want to get this out on Monday, but we've got the podcast. So it was this awkward, like, ooh, do I stay up and try to get this done so it's out before the podcast, or do I go to sleep, sleep well, get up, do it before the podcast, and then record? And then I just ended up staying up and getting it done, and here we are.
And here we are.
Okay. And the story's posted. It's about the white-hot Calgary Flames. And are they for real? Are they legit? But yeah, didn't sleep. It's stupid. I hate it.
Okay. Yeah, no,
so
I'm more of a...
Chris isn't making video clips of this.
Exactly. I'm more of a, I'm pretty much, I think when, what happens is when, if you end up having if you have kids, like for me, and our kids are older, but like, honestly, years of getting up at 5:30 and 6 in the morning, like you get to a point where you're like, I guess this is the time I get up now. So usually I'm up by 6:30 and I do like to write in the morning more than late at night, but yeah, I'm don't worry. I got a good sleep last night. And I'm ready to go. Okay, so I'll compensate if you're dragging a little bit here for the 60 minutes.
That's perfect.
I got you.
You know what? Like I used to work at before I started at the Athletic and right at coming out of college. I worked at CBC News as an editorial assistant and then an associate producer and then a radio and web reporter, and then I did a little bit of TV too. And I used to work the morning shift, so I used to just be up like in the office at either 5 or 6 a.m. And that was my life. Like I used to do the morning shifts. It would be like 6 to 2, 5 to 1. I did the kind of overnight shift once on the, you know, the 24-hour CBC News channel. So I was like in the office for 4 in the morning once, like 4 until noon or something. Like I had the weirdest morning hours. And that, you know, then I started working at like restaurants and stuff. And then you're used to just being up really late and et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know.
Oh, what restaurants did young Haley work at?
I worked at Shark Club in downtown Toronto for like 3 years, like basically throughout my 4 years of college.
Yeah.
Sports bar with like all the big TVs and stuff everywhere. That was a good spot. But then I worked at High Steakhouse, which was a lot different. Yeah. You go from the sports bar vibe with all the TVs, you know, working UFC nights until 5 in the morning because the Irish people won't get out of the bar after Conor McGregor wins or something. I'm not even kidding. We would like turn the lights on and be like, please get out. Go celebrate somewhere else. But yeah, I worked at High Steakhouse too, which is a good spot. They used to have one in Ottawa, right, Ian? They closed.
Highs, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was a Highs.
They have one in Calgary.
I need to know, what was, when you're working as a server at a sports bar, what fans are like the best tippers? Like UFC crowd, NFL crowd, or are they all equally the same? Like there's no discrepancy.
worst tippers is like soccer, football, terrible. The girls at the bar would like, if there was like a Champions League match or if there was like a Real Madrid Barcelona game, people would be like, no, I'm not working on Saturday, because the games are so early that people would come in for like brunch, or they would just come in either at like 11 for an early game or 3 o'clock, and they would, you know, for the most part, people would, and this is, you know, I would probably say that it's probably different at a bar like Hemingway's, which is like a local like watering hole for like soccer, rugby, whatever fans. But like at Shark Club, the soccer games are always the worst because the place would be slammed. Nobody would be drinking. And then nobody would tip. So soccer was always the worst. UFC was the best. Sunday football. Like it was all a hit or miss. Like it always depended on what section you had at the restaurant, if that made sense. Like yeah. if you had an area where everyone was like having fun and they were really into the game and they were like buying stuff and you had a good rapport with them, it was always good. But sometimes you would get tables who would like show up and get like a Diet Coke and share nachos, and they would sit there for 5 hours for the entirety of an event and like not tip on it, right? So it would be a hit or miss. But I remember soccer fans were, and I'm a big soccer fan. It was sad. They disappointed me. They were always the worst at Shark Club. Okay. Very sad.
Listen, speaking of tips, Haley, we got a tip for our listeners here at the Athletic Hockey Show right now, okay? We got the best deal ever on the print side of the Athletic, as good of a deal as we've ever had for new subscribers. And listen, if you're listening to this, there's a good chance you're familiar with what we do here at The Athletic and how we've kind of put together unique ways of covering sports, kind of a higher standard for sports coverage. And we believe that we've got the best newsroom in sports. We believe that your local team is covered like no other. We got some of the biggest names on the national level. I think Jason Stark and Ken Rosenthal and baseball and, you know, Lindsey Jones and Robert Mays. And, you know, for us, from the hockey world, Pierre LeBrun, Down Goes Brown, Katie Strang has done some excellent work. So what we're trying to tell you is, look, The Athletic is worth it. And right now, because we've got, as Haley likes to say, American Thanksgiving coming up. And you know what comes after American Thanksgiving? It's Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And we got the best price that you could lock in, best deal of the year, $1 a month for 12 months to be a subscriber with us at The Athletic. So anytime after 5 o'clock Eastern time, on Monday, the 22nd of November, for a week. So from the 22nd of November to the 29th, you're going to go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow. And you can get The Athletic for $1 a month for a whole year. So best sports coverage, like I said, for $1 a month for a whole year in honor, Haley, of Black Friday and Cyber Monday.
Yeah, it's a great deal, Ian, and I agree. Obviously, I think The Athletic is the place to be. We have so many great writers, so many great podcasts, and I think it's important that you specified it's an American Thanksgiving deal. You can benefit from this in Canada, but this is American Thanksgiving week. Let's not get it twisted. It's not just Thanksgiving. It's American Thanksgiving. If Craig Custance and Sean Gentile are going to make fun of our Canadian Thanksgiving, whatever about the American Thanksgiving, here's a good deal. We can benefit from it, but let's not call it Thanksgiving.
American Thanksgiving.
It's American Thanksgiving.
Yeah, in fact, we do some questions in the mailbag later about Thanksgiving that we'll get to, but I mentioned this off the top. You even alluded to this, the red hot Calgary Flames, Haley. The shutout, just to give our listeners a little bit of context here, the Flames have posted 7 shutouts within the first 20 games of the regular season, okay? For the context of the listeners, this is mind-blowing to me, okay? 7 shutouts in your first 20 games. The only other
games.
First team games. 7 shutouts. The only other teams that have done this were all in the dead puck era of the 1920s. You're talking the 1926 Ottawa Senators, the 1929 Montreal Canadiens, the 1928 Boston Bruins, the 1929 New York Rangers, the 1929 New York Americans, and the 2022 Calgary Flames. Haley, what, like, your automatic assumption would be, it's Daryl Sutter hockey, but, like, explain this to us. How could you have 7 shutouts in your first 20 games?
Yeah, well, I'll say too, probably one of the more kind of impressive and hilarious stats that I found too when I was I wrote a story last night. You know, just can the Flames keep this going? Like, are they a contender, or, you know, are they pretenders, right? And one of the things I found about the shutouts is the Flames have more shutouts than seven teams have wins. The Flames have seven shutouts. The Arizona Coyotes, Ottawa Senators, New York Islanders, Montreal Canadiens, Seattle Kraken, and Chicago Blackhawks, and Vancouver Canucks all have less than seven wins. And if you look at just regulation wins too, it's even more. Like, the Flames have more shutouts than teams, than like almost 10 teams have regulation wins this season. It's kind of wild. that they're kind of going around at this rate. And I think the best way to explain it is it's a mix of the style of hockey that they're playing, which is a credit to Daryl Sutter. But it's also the individual performances of the goaltenders. Obviously, you don't stumble onto a shutout. You could get 10 shots against, and if you're not a very good goalie, you're going to allow a couple. So it doesn't just happen by accident. So it's a credit to Jacob Markstrom. I think Markstrom had a really motivated and a better offseason this summer. I know he was really pissed off to be sitting at home in Sweden earlier than he wanted to. He gave us this dry, pretty funny quote at the beginning of the season, like, I didn't need to see my family that soon. I could have done with a couple more weeks or months away from my family members back home. But I think that was something that really drove him. He also had a really up and down season in his first year in Calgary that was disappointing for him. So this is like a rejuvenated and really motivated Jacob Markstrom. And it's not a leap to see him playing like this. He was the undisputed MVP in Vancouver only 2 years ago when he finished fourth in Vezina voting. So I don't think it's a stretch to think that Jacob Markstrom is an elite goaltender, because he's shown us that he can be. He just had that kind of, you can look at his season last year in three distinct kind of segments. He had a really, really hot start. Then he had the middle of the season after he got a concussion. He wasn't the same after that. It took him some time to get back up to speed. He had a really big lull in the middle of the season there. And then he finished the season really strong. So we're seeing, you know, elite Jacob Markstrom right now. Dan Vladar has worked his way up to the National Hockey League. There was a ton of questions about who this guy is. Are the Flames making, you know, some of the questions this offseason was, are the Flames kind of making a mistake here going with an unknown commodity? And Vladar was the best goalie in the American Hockey League 2 years in a row. He's worked his way over 6 years in the minors to get here, and I think he's proving that he's an NHL goalie. So it's a huge credit to both of these players. They're both 6'6". So they're big goaltenders who are good in their crease. They're athletic. They have similar playing styles, actually, which is kind of interesting to watch them. But they both look really calm in their net, and there's just a lot of good technical skill that we're seeing from both the Flames goalies. But like you said, Ian, like, a lot of this is Daryl Sutter hockey. I think historically this is a feature of Daryl Sutter-coached teams that you know, his systems favor his goaltenders. And I think a typical trait that we could see with a Daryl Sutter coach team is that they don't give up a ton of chances, and not a lot of them are high quality, which means that the Flames don't need their goalies to steal games. They're not just some band-aid covering up poor play in front of them. They're not getting overworked when they're getting in games. And all they need to do is make the saves that are coming at them. And we're seeing the Flames goaltenders do that. But a lot of it is a credit to the way that the team's playing in front of them. And that's Daryl Sutter hockey right now. You know, one of Markstrom's shutouts, I think the one game that he really stole was the 45-save shutout in Pittsburgh. Flames weren't very good that night. Markstrom was incredible. That was on the tail end of a back-to-back. Or not on the back-to-back, sorry. It was at the end of a long road trip at the beginning of the season, and he was incredible. And he went in and got a 45-save shutout in Pittsburgh. But some of his other shutouts are like 25 saves. Dan Vladar was a 27-save shutout last night. So, like, these aren't crazy, crazy, like, workloads for these guys. So the Flames are doing a good job suppressing chances and high danger chances, and the goalies are making the stops.
You know, you're saying the Flames have more shutouts than a handful of teams have wins, including Arizona. I feel like we need to either take credit or maybe it's some blame. But last week in the pod, we said, you know, maybe we need to kick off a new feature. Will the Coyotes win this week? Haley, right. The Coyotes went 3-0-1 last week. They didn't lose in regulation after we launched this new segment. Will the Coyotes win this week? They beat St. Louis. They beat Detroit. They beat LA. Their only loss was in a shootout to Columbus. After we launched this, will the Coyotes win? I guess my question is, do we now need to move to another downtrodden team and share the luck? Or do we stick with Arizona and say, will the Coyotes win this week?
I don't know, because I said that they were going to beat LA, and that is technically true.
They did. They beat them in overtime.
Yeah. So I feel like we just stick with it.
We stick with the Coyotes. Honestly. Like, we don't want to move to another we don't want to move to the Islanders. They've lost 5 in a row. Ottawa's struggled. Like, do we not want to look at one of these teams and say, will they win this week? And then maybe we give them the positive karma and the juju and all that stuff?
Feels like if we say, will the Sens win this week, it's going to get you specifically into some hot water as the Sens writer. Let's maybe not do that.
Okay, we're going to stick with the Coyotes then. Mm-hmm. Will the Coyotes win this week? And they've got 2 games coming up here, including – now, this is going to be a tough challenge for them. They got Edmonton this week. And anybody who knows the way that the Oilers are humming along here, they're playing really well. It's really hard to kind of shut down McDavid and Draisaitl. But they've got a game against Edmonton and a game against Dallas. That's it for this week for the Coyotes. They only have 2 games, Edmonton and Dallas. Which one are they winning, Haley?
Ooh, probably Dallas.
I think so, right? Okay. Yeah. There we go. We have spoken.
We have spoken.
This week's edition of Will the Coyotes Win? This week, we have taken a win over Dallas on the weekend. Okay. So another team that the Flames have more shutouts than wins would be Seattle. And I think when Vegas came into the league, they kind of altered our view of what expansion teams could and should be. And maybe it set up some unrealistic expectations for the Kraken. But as you look at Seattle, Haley, they've won only 5 games so far this year. They've lost 8 of their last 10. I know they won their last game, so maybe this is a little bit premature. They did beat Washington on the weekend to kind of stop an extended losing skid. But like, now does this feel about right, though? Like, where the Kraken are we like, yeah, you know what? Like, this is what an expansion team should be.
Yeah, I mean, certainly this is probably – I know that there was some analytical models who rated them pretty high, because they do have some players with strong underlying numbers, and they do have a good blue line. They were supposed to have goaltending, but goaltending is so unpredictable. But I think we saw in a lot of preseason, like, prognosticators were saying, like, the Kraken are actually going to be good. Like, this isn't going to be – a typical expansion team. They might not be Vegas level good, but they're going to be good. Look at all the pieces that they have. And you know, it wasn't just Dom. It was a lot of different public models who were really favoring the Seattle Kraken. But this is what I think I saw Greg Wyshynski tweeted, like, yes, we finally have a proper expansion team.
Yeah.
And like they look like an expansion team. They look like a franchise that just got put together this summer. They're not getting goaltending. You know, I think a lot of people, we were talking about it on the podcast during the expansion draft, like going out and getting Philip Grubauer. That was one of their big gets in free agency. And I guess everything's kind of a big get when you're starting from scratch. But that was one of the moves that was going to make the Kraken good is, okay, they've got good blue line, but like, look at their goaltending. And they're not getting good goaltending right now. And, you know, I think that that's not the only thing that's gone wrong with the Seattle Kraken, but, you know, we're really not seeing a team that looks as strong as a lot of the preseason kind of predictions would have said. I think you and I both weren't sold. Like, I think you could have looked at that roster and stripped away all the underlying numbers, like all the metrics, all the models, and looked at that roster and said, like, I don't think that's a playoff team. Like, I just didn't think there was enough there. I think we've talked about this before. teams weren't willing to hand out a bunch of stuff like they did with the Vegas expansion draft. I think teams learned their lesson, and general managers were not going to just give Ron Francis what he was asking for. And we heard that the prices for some of those deals were really high. And I think they're taking the hit from that. Like, I think a lot of people saw the expansion draft and were like, is that it? Like, that's who they're taking? Right. Like, is something else coming here? And I think Ron Francis got stuck holding the cards a little bit here. Like, you know, did you need to ask for a first and a third for Mark Giordano? That's not a great example because he's, you know, still a top pair defenseman. But did you need to be asking for that much right up until the end for certain players for side deals when you could have just, you know, taken a better player or a different player or made the side deal for a little bit less than what you believed to be market value based on what Vegas got? I just think this is what an expansion team looks like when they're not getting not free cookies, but like all these treats and goodies from the GMs. Look at Vegas. Part of the Eichel deal was from the expansion draft.
Totally.
That's not happening with the Kraken.
That Vegas expansion draft is like the old Christmas vacation line. It's the gift that keeps on giving, right? Like it just doesn't stop for Vegas. Hey, I think a lot, and we're going to get to Arthur Staple here in a second, because I think it's remarkable to me that the Islanders are only 1 point up on the Kraken. So if you think about that, if you want to understand how poorly the Islanders have started the season, they're 1 point up on the Kraken. So we're going to get Arthur Staple in here in a second. But I just want to take 1 second, Haley, to look at the opposite end of the standings. And I think this is really cool right now. As we start this week, and a lot of times people will tell you this week of American Thanksgiving is sort of this kind of this measuring stick moment, right? Where teams will look themselves in the mirror and say, like, are we a contender? Are we not? Like, where are we? It's kind of a natural stopping point for a little bit of self-reflection. And what I think is really interesting, if you look at the top of all the divisions right now, there's some compelling race. Like, nobody has more than a 2-point lead in the division, which I think is pretty remarkable. Like, nobody's running away and hiding. Carolina's only one up on Washington. Florida's only two up on Toronto. Minnesota's only one up on Winnipeg. And Calgary is one up on Edmonton. As you look at those four divisions right now, if I had to ask you here on the week of American Thanksgiving, where teams will often kind of look at themselves, you have to pick, Haley, and kind of this is like an early multiple choice, okay? Amongst Carolina, Florida, Minnesota, Calgary, who are you most confident at the end of the year, they're going to be in first place? Panthers, Hurricanes, Wild, or the Flames?
Yeah, it's a tough one because, like, I think the Central's probably been a bit weaker than we thought. You know, I guess one, two, like half of that division don't even have 8 wins yet. So you would maybe think that you like Minnesota's chances. I think the Carolina Hurricanes have been the best team. I mean, they've only lost twice this season, 14-2-0. But the Capitals have been good too. And Ovechkin seems ageless and like he's never going to get stopped, except they did lose to the Seattle Kraken the other night, who we were just talking about have been really bad. The Atlantic's tough because, you know, Florida's got a 2-point lead, but then it's Toronto and then it's Tampa Bay who are kind of creeping up on them. Calgary, who they've been playing great, but they have 2 games in hand, and I think Edmonton's going to take over that division. So I don't know. This is tough. Like, I feel like the best bet is Carolina. I think they have the best goal differential in the league right now at plus 24. The Flames actually have the best goal differential, but again, they have games in hand. Like they have a plus 24 goal differential. They don't allow a ton against. They've got good goaltending. They've got the depth. They've got the coach. So I'm probably going to go with Carolina.
I think it might be Florida for me. And I look at that, like, to me, that Metro division, it's so good. Like, I could see Carolina really being challenged by Washington, or the Rangers, and you know, don't sleep on some of those other teams that might rise up. I just feel like that division's so strong. Tampa's been hit with some injuries. I just think Florida and Toronto's obviously played really well, but boy, I love the Panthers. I think that what they've built there is sustainable. So I would probably tend to go with the Florida Panthers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Haley, quite the weekend in New York sports, especially when you talk from the hockey perspective. The Islanders open up the new arena. The Rangers sneak out with a last-second victory. Perfect person to bring in here. Talk about the weekend that was is our senior New York hockey columnist. He's Arthur Staple, and he's going to join us, Haley, with an amazing podcast voice. And he's going to tell us why he's got the great podcast voice going.
Well, the Islanders opened their arena and the Rangers had their dramatic victory, and I was stuck at home with a cold, as was the rest of my family. So it was nice to watch on TV and not really have to talk too much, but I've rallied to this point. And if this is as good as it gets for the last few days, you can tell how bad it was. So I'm glad I'm here.
Nice. Like I said, you got the nice podcast, the deep voice going, so we appreciate that. Hey, listen, obviously, I think the biggest storyline of the weekend in New York hockey was the Islanders' new arena opening. And like you said, look, for you, you were kind of under the weather. You didn't get to the UBS arena, but you've taken the tour. You've been in there. Give our listeners a little bit of a sense of that arena, amenities, some cool features, because I think anytime you get a brand new arena, that's what people want to hear about.
It's amazing. You know, covered the Islanders long enough to have seen a few of the places that they've played. Obviously, Nassau Coliseum, anybody who'd been there in the last, say, 30 years knew that it was a place that needed some upgrades. And even after they upgraded it, after the Islanders had their little detour to Barclays Center in Brooklyn, it still was the Nassau Coliseum. It was a building that was built in the 70s when great buildings weren't really put up. Small, cramped, exciting for hockey when they were good, but a pretty dismal place when they weren't good. And Barclays was just kind of ill-fitting, not a hockey building, some obstructed view seats, primary home of the Brooklyn Nets, and really that was what it was built for, was basketball. So the Islanders haven't had a great place to call their own pretty much ever. And so seeing this place finally come to fruition after years and years and years of trying to get it, various owners going all the way back to John Pickett, who was the owner during the dynasty years, trying to get a new building on Long Island, all the way up to the late Charles Wong, who really kept them on Long Island and tried to do this. And now with Scott Malkin and John Ledecky, who put a lot of great little touches in the place. John Ledecky as a co-owner is a real man of the people. He loves to listen to what the fans have to say. There's a lot of things I think that have fan input. The Islanders Hall of Fame, which is a great thing because it's pretty representative of the Hockey Hall of Fame with so many of the great players, used to be in an inaccessible area in the Coliseum. Now it's out on the concourse for everybody to see the plaques, a wall of records that they have in team history. And then inside the bowl, up at one end by an open-air bar, they have all the logos of all the different Islander fan meetup clubs from around the nation and around the world. I think they think there's one in Brazil, too. So they've done a lot of things that are nods to the fans and I think things that are going to make people happy to go in there. And then just a brand new building in 2021. It's an awesome place to see a game built by the same people that built Climate Pledge Arena out in Seattle. It's pretty immaculate. I was there for the team's practice last week, and as the players were kind of walking out on the ice for the first time and looking around, they were about as pleasantly surprised as anybody to see their new home. And I think all the fans' reviews of it were pretty positive from over the weekend.
I think I saw a video of two of the players. They were doing rock, paper, scissors to see who was going to go out first and like be the first person on the ice at the new arena. But did you see what's the green sand? What did you see this like blue dyed chicken sandwich that people were eating?
Yes.
Is this a Long Island thing? Like, can you explain this blue sandwich? It's important journalism, Arthur.
The blue and orange bagels are courtesy of Don Rosner, who runs a place called Blue Line Deli. And Don is probably one of the biggest Islander fans I've ever met. And his deli is a real home for Islander fans. It's kind of a shrine to the Islanders if you go in there. And it's also home to really good Long Island bagels, which are, sorry for everyone up in Canada, but way better than Montreal bagels. So, the blue and orange one, which are obviously the Islanders colors, they have their own stand in UBS Arena. And the chicken part, I think, comes from Shaquille O'Neal's Chicken Company. He was on hand to unveil that part of the menu. So it's kind of a marriage of Long Island and this hot chicken. It's a unique thing, and I don't know if I would eat one, but we have had the blue and orange bagels here in our house, and they are good. And it's another way that they've incorporated a lot of local people. There's one of the bars in the building is Offside Tavern, which was one of the only Islander fan-friendly bars in Manhattan before it closed during the pandemic. So now their new home is in the building. So again, a couple of more nice touches that Islander fans on Long Island really appreciate.
So is the bagel always, sorry, Ian, this is very important.
Forget the hockey. We need to talk about the bagels.
Is the bagel always blue and orange?
They have others. You could get whatever kind of bagel you want, but the blue and orange ones, it's like a rainbow bagel. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those, but
We don't have fun with our breakfast.
You guys need to live a little more with your bagels up there, but yeah. So
it's blue and orange bagel, cream cheese, and Nashville hot chicken.
I don't know about the cream cheese, but there's definitely chicken. It might be hot sauce. I didn't check it out, but you might make it down here at some point. We'll have to see.
Yeah, now I'm upset that I didn't go on that road trip. Take it away, Ian.
Haley's just obsessed with bagels because she covers the Calgary Flames, and it's just shutout after shutout after shutout. That's Haley's obsession.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Like, where are you going with this? I'm celiac. Bagels. I don't it's even like know donut. Why I'm it's asking like about the freaking bagel. I can't. Yeah. I can't eat them.
But I need to know though. Like, look, I think a lot of people thought the Islanders would. They started the season 13 games on the road, 5-6-2. They figured, okay, you're going to go home. You're going to win. How much pressure is on this team now, State? Because this is a team that went to back-to-back conference finals. They've lost five in a row now. Like, suddenly it looked like, is there legitimate panic around the Islanders right now?
It's a mess. I mean, you know, I don't mean to laugh. They're in real trouble right now. The COVID situation, you know, Haley brought up that rock, paper, scissors before they went on the ice. One of the guys was Ross Johnston, who went into COVID protocol that night after playing that rock, paper, scissors with Oliver Wahlstrom, who has somehow managed to avoid going on the COVID list. But at the end of the road trip, they had two games in Florida. Played in Tampa on a Monday, lost a pretty close game. And then the next day, Josh Bailey was in COVID protocol, their longest tenured player. He's still in Florida quarantining. He missed the opener of the new arena. Ryan Pulock suffered what we believe to be his broken foot in that game in Tampa. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. And then the COVID situation, as Ian, you know, in Ottawa, it doesn't get better until it hits the wall of someone who's already had it or enough vaccinated people to get rid of it. Anders Lee went in, along with Ross Johnston, Adam Pellick, their best defenseman, so along with Ryan Pulock. And then Brock Nelson, who scored the only two goals against Calgary, went out with an injury last night against Toronto in the first period. He's a guy who had the fifth longest consecutive games played streak in the league at 316, and we're waiting to hear what the word is on him. So the breaks are really beating these guys right now, and they've got six players in COVID protocol. They're off today. I don't know if we're going to hear about any more. It was a real makeshift lineup that they put out there against both of these teams over the weekend. They're having trouble scoring goals even before that. They've lost all six games by at least three goals, which they haven't done since their expansion season in 1972. So there's a lot going wrong with this team. You know, the arena was great, and I think the fans are super excited, but this season is hanging by a thread. It's amazing to say this after 15 games, but they've got two with the Rangers this week if they manage to get played and don't have any postponements. The Penguins come in, who are on the rise a little bit, and the Flyers. Four divisional games. If they don't get wins in any of them, or maybe in only one of them, then they're looking at maybe a 10-point gap at the playoffs after American Thanksgiving, and that seems pretty impossible to make up. So it's, like you said, it's hard to believe that we're here, but we're here, and it's difficult times for them.
And I guess, Arthur, because, you know, you cover both the Islanders and the New York Rangers, so maybe if we can transition a little bit.
Don't tell anybody that. They get very upset when we say we cover both of them. But right.
That's fair. But I think people, yeah, well, it's everybody. So if we can maybe just look at the New York Rangers here for a second, you know, I guess not even just in comparison to the Islanders, but just how would you evaluate the start for the season for the New York Rangers? Is this on par for what we could have expected? Are they more middling? Like, what's your take on the Rangers?
I mean, it's the opposite. They've been good and they've been lucky too. You know, they've won a lot of games that maybe they didn't deserve to win. If you look at the numbers, Igor Shesterkin really saved them in several games when they had their early trips up to Canada. They had a couple stumbles, you know, out in Western Canada, you know, blown a couple 2-goal leads in Vancouver and Edmonton. They got their doors blown off in Calgary a few weeks ago. But ever since then, they've been playing really well. You know, last night, with their late game heroics to beat Buffalo, it wasn't their best game. Alexander Georgiev got the start. Their backup goalie has been pretty shaky this year, but it doesn't matter. They're finding ways to win games, especially against teams below them in the standings like Buffalo. And to do it in such dramatic fashion and take both points out of it is kind of emblematic of the way that they played. They've been really opportunistic. They obviously have that high flying offense. I think Gerard Gallant is trying to instill in them an ability to play in tight games and play defensively when they need to. They have the reigning Norris Trophy winner in Adam Fox. They have Shesterkin, who's been one of the best goalies in the league. Artemi Panarin, Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider's been on fire. And they have a bunch of kind of no-name, you know, lunch pail guys now who can kind of carry them through when things are going a little bit rough. They didn't really have that before, and that was the design of Chris Drury's off-season move, was to bring in guys like Ryan Reeves, guys like Sammy Blais, who's out now with the torn ACL, but, their fourth line now with Kevin Rooney, Dryden Hunt, signing Barkley Goodrow to a big contract, maybe a little too big, but he's a guy who kind of brings them a little bit more backbone when things aren't going well. And you see the results. They've won a lot of these games when maybe, like I said, they didn't deserve to, but points are points and it doesn't matter how you get them, and they're piling them up. And like I said, they've got two games with the Islanders this week, a decimated team. If they win both of those and can beat the Flyers too, they play them next week. You're looking at maybe a 10-point cushion between them and the playoff cut line, and that's going to be huge for them going forward.
You know, you mentioned the Panarin. Kreider is like turning back the clock here with 13 goals. But I'm curious, what's been going on with the guys that they took at the top of the draft? I think when the Rangers announced a couple of years ago that they were rebuilding, a lot of it was centered around Kaapo Kakko and Alexis Lafreniere, and it feels like from the outside looking in that they've just been okay, or maybe just pedestrian, so to speak, to start the season. How would you rate Lafreniere and Kakko to start this season?
You know, Kakko, he got off to a slow start. He was injured the second week of the season, and I think that really set him back. And he's just starting to get back. And I think in the last five games or so, you're seeing the guy that was the second overall pick. He's you know, kind of part of their most successful, most consistent line with Panarin and Ryan Strome. And he's the heavy part of that line. Those other two guys are going to weave in and out and make a lot of fancy plays. And Kakko is really a very much a north-south type player. And he scored a couple of goals where he's just plowing to the middle of the ice and beating goalies with some good moves, some power moves. This is the guy they expected to have. And I think, you know, the numbers may not be terribly gaudy right now, but I think at the way that he's playing at this point, you know, if he ends up being a 20-25 goal guy, that's a huge success for him, considering the stumbles of the last couple of years. And when it comes to Lafreniere, you know, I think Gallant has taken kind of a special interest in him and trying to make him into a more complete player. The knock on him, I guess, if there really was one when he was picked first overall, was just that maybe, you know, he wasn't quite as instinctual moving his feet and making sure his body was in the right position. And I think he can fall victim to that sometimes because he is such a skilled playmaker. He started the year with Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. Played pretty well there, but I think, you know, of late he's been playing on a third line, getting pretty limited minutes. You know, he was close to being a healthy scratch, I think, on that Western Canada trip. But I think it's part of the bigger picture with him, which is they want to make him into a complete guy. You know, he's definitely a top six forward in this league. You know, I think they want to see a little bit more well-rounded play, and I think this is kind of the hard part for him. And if they can win games with him learning and growing instead of having to be a major contributor, that's obviously going to help him down the road. And you know, for all the impatience that everybody has because he was number one overall pick, sometimes these things take time. He's mostly he's primarily a winger. It's not really a position that where you're going to like break out and be a superstar right away these days. So I think the pace that they're going with him is deliberate. It's not going to produce incredible results. He's still one of the leaders for them in 5-on-5 goals, but I think he's getting there. And I think he's a guy that you're going to see Because they have some holes on the wings in their top 12, I think he's going to be a guy who's going to more and more gain the trust of Gallant and probably play a much bigger role as the season goes on.
Darren Dreger from TSN reported on Thursday that the Rangers are looking, or they're on the lookout for a middle six forward to replace Sam. Is it Sammy Blais?
It is Blais, yeah.
Okay. You know what? I had a little panic mid-question there, being like, wait a second. To report Sammy Blais, who's done for the season with a torn ACL, you confirmed that they're looking to add a forward. A veteran defenseman might be on the shopping list as well. What can you tell us just about what they're looking for and who might, you know, be able to check those boxes for the Rangers?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, that a lot of what they're looking for depends on clearly what's available. And I don't know how much is available right now. But they do have Philip Hedel as their third line center right now, playing between Lafreniere and Julien Gauthier. And Hedel, there's some debate. It may not be as strong inside the organization, but there certainly was before, that whether Hedel might be better suited as the wing and probably a natural fit with Kreider and Zibanejad. And then you've got to shore up your third line. You've got guys like Goodrow. You've got, you know, you've got Dryden Hunt, Rooney, those guys in the bottom six. So, you know, I feel like Seattle, which has stumbled out of the gate. I know Ron Francis doesn't like to make trades very much, but a guy like Calle Järnkrok, to me, who's a versatile third line guy, can contribute some offense, might be someone that you could pick up for not too expensive. You know, I think at the other end of the spectrum, obviously Arizona probably wouldn't be disappointed to part with Phil Kessel. That's a special situation, I think, when you go and trade for Phil. It needs to be the exact right environment. I don't know if the Rangers have that quite yet. But that would certainly be fun to see him with this group, because they are such an offensively gifted group. And as far as the defense goes, you know, they signed Patrick Nemeth. He's had a bit of a struggle on the third pair. He's played mostly with Nils Lundqvist, a rookie that they like a lot. And Jared Tenorti has subbed in. And that third pair has struggled a lot. So you'd think that they'd maybe want a more veteran guy. I know Mark Giordano was a guy that they talked about in the offseason before he ended up going to Seattle, and obviously being named captain there, not so sure that they would be willing to give him up at this point. But it's someone along those lines, I would think, a guy who could be a third pair guy who maybe doesn't have to play every night. The Rangers certainly have enough cap space to make some of these moves happen. And I think with the way that they've started, it's kind of one of those situations where Chris Drury might want to reward his team for getting off to a better start than people thought and being a team that could be a serious contender for the playoffs. And think about adding, when they lose a guy like Blais, who, you know, played a decent role but wasn't a key contributor, that you could at least shore up the wings there and go out and get somebody to at least encourage the group that he feels like they've done a good job and that this is a serious playoff team.
Well, listen, Arthur Staple, it has been terrific to have you here on the podcast. And we're looking forward to what should be a couple of entertaining games this week. Islanders-Rangers are always fun, entertaining games. And like you said earlier, maybe it's a little bit of a pressure point for the Islanders here if they don't come out of these with at least a win. So we'll look forward to your coverage from those games. Hope you're feeling a little bit better. You sounded great throughout the podcast. Thanks for doing this, and we'll get you again down the road.
Thanks, everybody. All right, we'll see you.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
All right. Always great catching up with Arthur Staple. By the way, we got to give a little plug to his podcast. He's going to have a brand new edition of No Sleep Till Belmont. Not changing the name, by the way, even though they got the new arena built. No Sleep Till Belmont, the podcast coming out, and Denny Potfan is going to join Arthur for that. So look forward to seeing that drop a little bit later on Monday. Haley, why don't we open up the Hailbag? Because I asked I asked for some questions from our listeners, and we got a whole bunch of them here. Okay? This one comes in from Cranman. Cranman wants to know, is Thursday just a normal day in Canada, or do a lot of people take the day off and watch football? It's actually Cranman's real name, I think, is Jason. So that one's from Jason.
Jason Cranman. I don't know. Like, I feel, I don't know if I can accurately represent like what all of Canadians do, but I definitely spend the Thursday watching football because I love football. And, you know, I'm a degenerate fantasy football person who's has my heart broken every week. But I definitely spend the Thursday watching football. I don't know if I can say what everyone else is doing. I'm sure you do too, but.
I need to know. Yeah, my favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys, play every year on Thanksgiving. So I'm always glued. But I need to know, Haley, did you ever work a shift at the Shark Club on American Thanksgiving where the whole day people were just in there watching football?
Yes, definitely. Like and, football days were, yeah, like people would do that for sure.
Yeah.
And those are the days where you just hope that you have like cool people because they're going to be there all day.
I think a lot of Canadians take the Thursday, Friday either off work or kind of dial it back and they sit there and they watch football all day. And now they've added the third game, right? So
right. You
could pretty much go, wall to wall. Matthew wants to know from us, Haley, what good team do you look at and you still don't trust them quite yet? So Matthew's wondering if we look at the top of the standings of the National Hockey League, and earlier we talked about some of those first place teams. I think we trust Florida and Carolina based on what we kind of said. But is there a team that started the season that's kind of maybe sitting in a playoff spot here, and you're like, yeah, you know, I don't know if I trust that team. Is there one team for you that you're a little leery on?
Yeah, like, you know, they're not in the like upper echelon of the league, but I still don't know if what some of the California teams are doing is sustainable.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I think there's a lot going right for the Anaheim Ducks right now, and they've certainly kind of switched places with the Flames and the Oilers for top in that Pacific Division and top in the Western Conference the last little bit, and like they're getting good performances from Trevor Zegras. John Gibson looks great. The team looks, you know, fun, and you know they're good to watch. They've been winning hockey games. Ryan Getzlaf looks like he's gone back a couple of years too, and I don't know if that's something that they're going to do over the course of an 82 game season. But it's been fun to watch. I don't know if I'm completely sold on that being a thing again. As I said, over the course of an 82 game season, so I would probably say that Anaheim's the one that I'm most skeptical on because they are higher in the standings. Than the other the other California teams. Los Angeles has been, you know, not as surprisingly good, but they've been better than we expected. I feel like that's the big one for me. Like, I think Minnesota's been good. The Jets are starting to climb the standings. I think I was more surprised when they were bad than they are now that they're climbing the standings. I was more surprised by their kind of bad start to the season. I'm gonna say Anaheim for me.
Yeah, it might be a team you just mentioned for me, and it's Minnesota. And it's because they've got sub 900 save percentage from their goalies. Like they've had an 898 save percentage to start the season, which I think you can ride that for small windows where you're getting kind of below average goaltending. I don't think that's sustainable over the course of 60, 70, 80 games. So I'm real curious on Minnesota. If they get better goaltending, I'm all in. Like, I love Kaprizov. Hartman's having a good season. Like, Marcus Foligno's shooting the lights out. Like, they've had some like, they're winning games that way. But I just don't know that you can keep winning with sub-900 save percentage. I think they're a great story. That's the team I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch you with a very cautious eye here in the next 4 to 6 weeks, and we're going to see you go. Ozzy's got a tweet for us. Says, hey guys, saw an interview with Ian for the first time and actually finally saw what he looks like, and I was caught way off guard. LOL. He makes himself seem so much older than he actually looks. I was expecting a gray-haired old schooler, as per his self-description. There we go. Ozzy was like,
what's the question?
There's no question. Ozzy was just blown away, apparently, at the way I looked and did not.
Because you speak like an old man.
I guess so. Get off my lawn, all that stuff. But I think what happens is if you haven't seen somebody, like sometimes the voice and the face don't match up, right? Like that right. always happened to me as a kid when you're listening to radio. And then all of a sudden you see the person, you're like, what? That's what, you know, that's what Rick Dees looks like or whoever. I don't know why right. I said Rick Dees, but you know
Peter
what I mean?
Peter Mansbridge matches the voice. I think you meet Peter and you're like, yeah. I mean, I guess he's a television person. But if you just like heard his voice and then you see Peter, you're like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But anyway, so apparently I didn't quite match up to what Ozzy thought I might look like.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Matthew wants to know, hey, when you guys are watching hockey games, what do you tend to look for the most? Are you looking at the goalies, the forwards, line matchup, lineup changes, how active coaches are? You know, this is actually a really good question. I appreciate it, Matthew, because I think everybody watches hockey differently, right? Yeah. Like we all watch it and there's no right way or there's no wrong way. I want to make that clear. Like if you watch a game because you like the goalies or you like to see line matching and all that, have at it. I'm just curious what, like if you're watching a game, what's the one, is there one thing that you tend to look at the most?
Yeah, I think it all depends on who they're playing against. So for example, when the Flames were in Toronto at the start of the game, I was really interested to see what the line matching was. I wanted to see who Daryl Sutter was throwing over against Matthews and Marner and Tavares. Who was the fourth line going up against who? So I think line matching in games where you're up against like an elite team who can roll four lines, I think that's always interesting to look out for. If I'm going into a game with a specific story idea, I'll specifically watch that player and I'll do like shift by shift analysis on guys. I haven't done that. I remember I did that on Logan Brown when he made his like debut when I was on the Sens beat, and I was specifically just honing in on everything Logan Brown's doing. Like sometimes that's the only way you're going to pick up on all the little things about a player's game is when you're specifically only watching them, and then you can go back and cut the clips, etc. I've been watching the goalies a lot. Just, you know, you hear little things about how calm Markstrom's been in net, and you want to watch and see what that really means. There was also one thing that it's always when you get little nuggets from people, and that's why talking to people who maybe know more than you do is really helpful. I remember somebody told me, watch Dustin Wolf when he's in net because he rarely drops down into the butterfly unless he needs to. And I remember like zoning in and watching him. Like you can watch him now in Stockton, but when he was here for prospect camp and he was playing in these scrimmages, this kid is always just up and standing because he's listed as 6 feet tall. He's not a bigger goalie. So he will make saves from standing, which is not something you see from goalies all the time. And I don't know if that's something I would have noticed if right. I hadn't been told, like, watch Dustin Wolf. He will stand at the top of his crease and he will make a glove save while standing up. Like, he will not drop down because he's trying to stay as big as possible and he'll try to stay at the top of the crease and be aggressive. So there's lots of little things. And again, I think it all just depends, like, if there's a specific thing you're going into a game to watch. If there isn't really anything specific, I feel like sometimes I'll write down just like the line rushes to keep track of things. That was something I used to do when I covered junior in the American Hockey League because you wouldn't get time on ice. So I would write down the lines every time that like, I would write down who's on the ice and be like, okay, well, it looks like Rasmus Sandin had 25 shifts this game.
45 minutes.
Let's multiply that by 45 seconds each, and this is maybe what Rasmus Sandin played today. So that was kind of how we had to do it in the minors. Sometimes I'll do that, though, as like a way to just force myself to like look for things. Like, oh, did someone get double shifted? Has someone not played a little bit? Sometimes that's a way to just like keep you in check. Because you can wander. Like sometimes you're at a game and if the game's not great, you'll be like, oh no, like I didn't pay attention for the last 4 minutes. So it's a great question, but I think I think the way I approach games is always a little bit different.
You know, for me, just to answer this one real quick, I think if I'm at the arena, one of the things I love that you can't get on television is watching a coach's reaction. So if a power play gets busted up and they're struggling, you can actually sometimes see the exasperation on a coach's face, or if there's a giveaway in their own zone, or if there's a bad goal given up. You don't often see that on television, right? Like, there's not a simultaneous camera on the coach for the reaction. And sometimes that it actually tells you a lot. Like, if there's a player that you're like, I don't know if this guy is going to make the team or not, and he gives the puck away, and you look at the coach and you can see the shoulders slump or pounds the glass in frustration, you know, it gives you a little bit more information, like a little bit more intel of, okay, that didn't impress the coach. And so it's just, sometimes it's just little things like that. But I love that. That question. I thought that was a great question.
I'll say too, like, I like watching Daryl Sutter's bench management. He's really active on his bench, and you can always see sometimes you'll see him, like, I think, you know, obviously Daryl can be short, and he has he can be short, and I guess he has that, like, grumpy, I don't even know how to accurately kind of describe the perception of him sometimes, but, like, you see moments on the bench where you know, he can go and just give a player, like, an encouraging word or, like, a pat or whatever. Like, I like watching the bench management and, like, pulling a guy back and be like, no, like, we're going to go with this line here, or, like, this is what we need. Like, watching NHL coaches run their bench is really interesting. Like, it's the littlest things on, like, who's going to go over next on the power play, or, like, what line are we going to throw over, especially when you're at home and you can control the line. Like, you have the last change and stuff. And you can pick which sides you're doing face-offs. Like, bench management's, like, a really kind of, like, nerdy, fun thing to pay attention to.
Let's wrap up the show, shall we, Haley? Like we always did, always do, sorry, with a little multiple choice madness, okay? So I want to actually play a little audio here. This first question is going to involve something that happened last week in a game between the Dallas Stars and the Minnesota Wild, where Minnesota native Riley Tufte was all set to make his first his NHL debut, or the first game he'd play in the NHL in his hometown. Big deal, bought tickets, you know, lined up family and friends, all this stuff. I was told at the morning skate that he was going to play, and then got to the afternoon, and guess what? He wasn't playing. And I want you to have a listen, just because people obviously were wondering what the heck happened here. What was Rick Bowness doing and thinking? So have a listen. After the game, this is what Rick Bowness said when asked about making Riley Tufte a healthy scratch back in Minnesota.
As of 4 o'clock, he knew he wasn't going to play. So they had lots of time to cancel tickets or whatever that was. So I honestly don't understand the big deal about this, but whatever. He's a good kid. We had a good conversation. There's no issues.
All right, Haley, here's my multiple choice madness question for you. Based on what you heard from Rick Bowness, based on you knowing the fact that Riley Tufte got scratched in that game, how would you describe that situation? Is it A, that is worse than what Mike Babcock did to scratch Jason Spezza in the Leafs home opener a couple of years ago? B, you know what? It's actually right on par. Exactly the same thing as what Babcock did to Spezza. Or C, you know what? There's nothing wrong with what Rick Bowness did. This guy's just trying to win games, and coaches in the NHL cannot be worried about sentimental storylines like this one. Where do you fall on this one, Haley?
You know what? I think it's almost worse. It's tough because I thought what Mike Babcock did to Spezza was really garbage. Like, this is a veteran player who, you know, essentially took a discount because he wanted to play in Toronto, play for his hometown team. He's all excited to have his family there. It's the home opener. Like, that was supposed to be a really special thing for Jason Spezza, and he was scratched. But, like, with Tufte, like, he was led to believe that he was going to be in the lineup. He is a 23-year-old player. I believe he'd only played two NHL games up until that point. He spent most of the minimal money you make when you're, like, a call-up to get tickets for his family and friends to all be there. Like, he didn't get them all gifted from the Dallas Stars. Like, he bought tickets for his family, and I believe one of his teammates, like, helped him out to pay for it all. And he'd been led to believe that he was starting or he was playing in that game. He has these, like, great quotes about how meaningful and special it is. These great quotes for, you know, I played in this arena when I was a kid, and to come and play here in the NHL with my family and friends in the building is going to be so special. And then he gets scratched instead the day of the game. So did his like family and friends just sit there and watch the rest of the team play without him? Like, I think what happened to Spezza was bad, but like this, I don't know, maybe it just feels a bit worse because of the like how young he is, the last minute nature of it. Like, he went and bought all these tickets. He was so excited. You get all these quotes. And then there was a bit of karma, like, pretty sure the Stars lost that game.
Yeah, and handily.
So, too, like, handily. Like, are we really going to say, like, good lineup decision, Rick Bonus? Because Riley, like, clearly taking him, I'm not suggesting that having Riley Tufte in the lineup would have helped them not lose that game. But it certainly didn't help them win by scratching him last minute and doing that in front of his friends and family.
No, and you know, the story that got me, and I do think it's worse than Babcock scratching Spezza in some ways, which was bad, but the story that got me was Riley Tufte that morning had talked about, you know, when I was 11 years old, I was diagnosed with diabetes and had to spend time at the Children's Hospital in Minnesota, and remembers as one of the things he got as a kid visiting the hospital was they gave him tickets to a Minnesota Wild game, and he got a package of tickets to go see the Wild. And he was dreaming at the age of 11, I would love to be here and play. Like, this would be my dream come true. And imagine having that, and it's literally sitting right there. You're hours away from it happening, and it gets taken away in that particular manner. I think that's wrong. And I'm not a believer that coaches should, this is a cool storyline. Don't start people because it's a sentimental storyline. But there's a fine line. And you know what you can do for an athlete, how you can motivate them and how you can motivate their teammates. And if you were looking for a spark, you felt like your team was a little bit flat, wouldn't the guy who was an 11-year-old kid who went through a medical situation and dreamed about playing this building, wouldn't that guy be the one who's the most motivated to play? Wouldn't the guy who had all the tickets for his friends and family, wouldn't that guy be the guy who probably busted his tail on every shift and made sure he tried to score? Like, wouldn't that be the guy to start? No?
You would think so.
Right.
You would think that would add a boost. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and sorry, that's the story. I think I said when he was 11, he played there or something, but.
Yeah, no, it was exactly what you, it was the tickets that he was 11 years old and he was dreaming about playing there. Yeah. It's kind of nutty to me. But hey, listen, one more question to wrap it up. Multiple choice madness here on this Monday. Okay. Right now, Haley, who would you say is the best surprise story to start this season in the NHL from like an individual standpoint? Okay. So who's the best surprise story to start this season as an individual? Is it A, Andrew Mangiapane of the Calgary Flames, B, Troy Terry of the Anaheim Ducks, C, Tristan Jarry of the Pittsburgh Penguins, or D, somebody else? Haley, who's the best story to start this season individually?
I've probably got to go with, Tristan Jarry, like, just based on the complete turnaround in his game and like the public perception of him after last season. Like, he was public enemy number one, scapegoat number one after the Penguins lost in the first round of the playoffs to the New York Islanders last year. And it was like, yeah, if Tristan Jarry makes that stop or Tristan Jarry doesn't make that turnover, if Tristan Jarry's better, the Penguins have a better chance. Like, he was to blame in very many circles for the Penguins' playoff problems last season. And, you know, he's got a shutout the other night against Toronto. He's playing really well. He's got the starter's crease again, and I haven't seen the same negativity around him. Like, I think Mangiapane obviously is a great story. He's got 15 goals in 19 games, and Troy Terry was on, you know, every day. It's just like, oh, okay, now he's on a 9-game point streak. Now it's a 10-game point streak, 11-game point streak. Like, and he kind of came out of nowhere. I think Mangiapane, anybody in this market or people outside the market paying attention could have seen a breakout season coming. I've said this before. I'd like to pretend I was a genius in picking him as a breakout candidate. But it was pretty clear that Mangiapane was going to take the next step this season because it's really all he's ever done. So I've probably got to go with Jarry just because of, like I said, the complete difference in turnaround from being, you know, to blame for a lot of the Penguins' issues last year to, you know, a competent and like solid starter right now in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. You know what? I for me, it's the Troy Terry story. I've been so compelled by this thing. This is a guy who's already set career highs in goals and points, and we're not even at you know, American Thanksgiving. And look, they're all great stories. There's probably a couple of even earlier. Chris Kreider's off to a great start. But this guy is unbelievable. What Troy Terry is doing to me on the point streak, and it just feels like every night you're seeing him get point after, like, he's got points in what, 16 straight hockey games for Anaheim. Like, he just got shut out, I think, on opening night, and every other night he's at, like, it's a great story. Guy was a fifth round pick taken in the middle of the draft. Nobody saw this coming. This is great. This is a great story. I love to see it. So I would go with him, but I don't think you can go wrong, honestly, with any of those picks. All right, we will put a wrap, a bow on it. Haley, you are now. What's your deal here? You said you didn't sleep, so you're hitting the hay here. You're going right to bed.
No, it's a busy day. We've got a bunch of stuff going on. I'm working on a big feature with Dan Robson right now. So I've got to log into that, doing a little collaboration with Scott Wheeler. So got to do that. Got to walk the dog. So no, I won't be napping.
Look at you working with the Wheeler and Robson, like a great teammate there.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Hey, listen, we look forward to that. And look, this is a great time to remind you, if you want to see those great features that Haley's working on, whether it's the one with Dan Robson or Scott Wheeler, we got the best deal of the year for you coming up here. So anytime after 5 o'clock Eastern time on Monday, if you're not a subscriber with The Athletic, you can get our best deal of the year. It's $1 a month for 12 months. All you got to do is visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Again, $1 a month for 12 months. Visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow.